Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, June 10th, 2026. We begin on the front page, above the fold, sentencing of ex-pharmacist reset for July, judge rules. Delay allows Vogel to obtain psychological evaluation first. Paxton. Over the objection of Ford County's prosecutor, the sentencing of former Paxton pharmacist on a felony drug charge was delayed last week to allow her to first complete a psychological evaluation that had been ordered by the court nearly 15 months earlier as a condition of her pretrial release. Jenna Lee Vogel, the one-time owner and head pharmacist of the since-shuttered Doug's Compounding Pharmacy, was allowed to remain free from custody until sentencing too, despite State's Attorney Andrew Killian's request to detain her. Vogel was expected to be sentenced in Ford County Circuit Court on Tuesday, June 2nd, 2 months after the 36-year-old Gibson City woman pleaded guilty to one count of possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance, a Class 3 felony. Immediately after the sentencing hearing began, though, Vogel's attorney James Martinicus of Champaign asked Judge Matt Fitton to continue it to another date in the near future. After hearing arguments, Fitton granted Martinicus' request, setting a new sentencing hearing for 2 p.m. Monday, July 27. Martinicus said the delay would allow Vogel to complete a psychological evaluation, the results of which could be helpful to Fitton in determining an appropriate sentence. Vogel has been attending counseling with a therapist since last December, but has not yet obtained a psychological evaluation, Martinicus said. In objecting to Martinicus' motion, Killian noted that a psychological evaluation was ordered by the court back in March 2025 as part of the conditions of Vogel's pretrial release order, yet she had apparently not completed the evaluation or even scheduled one as of last week's hearing. Killian noted that Vogel, while free from custody for more than a year, had every chance to complete the evaluation if she would have wanted its findings to be considered. "This is a delay that is caused by her own actions," Killian told Fitton. While Martinicus acknowledged that Vogel has not been perfect, he asked Fitton to use his discretion and grant a delay in sentencing, but not a huge delay, so that the results of the psychological evaluation could be considered in determining a fair, reasonable sentence. After weighing the arguments, Fitton granted Martinicus's motion. Fitton says he does not want the case to drag on much longer, though, as it needs it is a case that needs closure. Killian then asked Fitton to order that Vogel be taken into custody and detained at the county jail until she completes the psychological evaluation. Killian said Vogel should not be rewarded by continuing to be allowed to remain free for her failure to obtain the evaluation. Killian added that an evaluation could be scheduled and obtained faster, perhaps, if Vogel were in custody. Martinicus objected, saying that placing her in custody would seem to be directed as punishment. Martinicus then offered to walk downstairs with Vogel to the court services office to have the psychological evaluation scheduled immediately. In reply, Killian said the court would have no control over when the evaluation might actually occur, though. Killian added that Martinicus could still help with the scheduling of an evaluation on Vogel's behalf if she were to be in jail. While continuing to be free, Killian said, she is, for lack of a better term, profiting from her own wrongdoing. Ruling that Vogel could remain free, Fitton advised her to schedule an evaluation as quickly as possible and follow all other conditions of pretrial release. "This is something that needs to be taken care of," Fitton told Vogel. Vogel faces a mandatory sentence ranging from up to 30 months of probation to anywhere from 2 to 5 years in prison. As part of the plea agreement, Vogel pleaded guilty in April to a Class 3 felony count of possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance. In exchange, Killian agreed to dismiss a Class X felony count that he had filed against her. According to charging documents, the Class 3 felony alleged that Vogel knowingly possessed with intent to deliver an amount of amphetamine on March 10, 2023, while the dismissed charge alleged that she knowingly possessed with the intent to deliver 100 grams or more of a substance containing hydrocodone on that date. It was on that same date when 43,893 controlled substances were removed from the Vogel home in Gibson City by investigators for the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, according to a complaint that led to the temporary suspension of her registered pharmacist license by the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. The drugs included medications in their original manufacturer's bottles, as well as unlabeled vials, containers of compounded creams and products with and without product name, and loose tablets and capsules in the bottoms of bags and totes, the complaint said. Only some of them were Vogel's prescriptions. 3 days later, the complaint said, Vogel's then-husband turned over to the DEA some of the antihypertensive drug clonidine that had been found in their home. According to the complaint, Vogel's pharmacy at 137 North Market Street in Paxton, which closed suddenly months earlier, had purchased more than 50,000 tablets of clonidine but never sold them. Meanwhile, her three kids' childcare providers said they had noticed the kids were sleepy and lethargic, the complaint noted. The complaint, filed by Mary Meehan, chief of the health-related prosecutions for the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, led to a finding that Vogel poses an imminent danger to the public and the suspension of Vogel's license, effective May 5, 2023. Vogel purchased Doug's Compounding Pharmacy in 2019 from its longtime former owner and pharmacist, Doug Higgins, who established the business in 1997. She previously did an internship there as a pharmacy student. The pharmacy suddenly shut down in winter 2022-23, not long after a foreclosure complaint was filed against Vogel by the Arkansas-based First Financial Bank, which secured judgment in its favor in September 2023. According to the foreclosure complaint, Vogel defaulted on a $1.75 million mortgage she secured to acquire the pharmacy. Following a foreclosure sale, Andy Hudson of Paxton, who owns Hudson Drug and Hallmark Shop at 108 North Market Street in the city's downtown, purchased the former Doug's Compounding Pharmacy in fall 2023 and opened Hud's Family Fun Zone there in December 2024. Back on the front page, from the Paxton City Council, rules for backyard chickens get first look. Draft to be reviewed for second time on July 7th after city attorney makes changes. Paxton. Paxton aldermen spent an hour and a half reviewing an initial draft of proposed backyard chicken ordinance on Tuesday, June 2nd, making edits suggested by both City Attorney Tony Schering and themselves. The document, using language borrowed from other municipalities' ordinances on urban chickens, is expected to be put in finalized draft form early next month when the city's council's License, Permit, Zoning, Insurance Committee meets for a second time to look it over. The meeting, which is open to the public, was set for 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 7th at City Hall. Once finalized by the four-member committee chaired by Alderman Dean Gyken, the document would advance to the full eight-member council, which would decide whether to send it to the city's Planning and Zoning Commission for a public hearing. The commission would issue a recommendation for the council's consideration on whether to approve the new ordinance or make additional changes. Schering plans to make some additional edits himself ahead of July's meeting, he said, as aldermen share additional input with Schering if needed via email. While numerous nearby communities already allow backyard chickens, they currently can only be kept in Paxton if they are at least 150 feet from any home, church, school building, or public way, according to city code restrictions that makes raising them impossible on most residential properties, many just 50 feet wide. A non-binding ballot question on the March 17th primary election asked Paxton voters if they would be in favor of the establishment of rules to allow for the keeping of backyard chickens. The turnout was small, with only 661 residents casting a vote, and margin slim, 335 voting yes to 326 voting no. Most other people in this city didn't care to weigh in, so I think it would be pretty safe for the council to move forward on it, said former Alderman Paul Crutcher, a backyard chickens proponent, who was among just two members of the public to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting, the other being his wife, Rachel. They said several other area towns have allowed urban chickens for years, with few of any resulting problems. They make it work, Paul Crutcher said. Rachel Crutcher said she and her family would love to have backyard chickens, noting the educational learning experience they would provide for her children, in addition to the clean food they would provide via egg production. Meanwhile, Geigen and the three other members of the committee, Alderman Kristen Larson, Rob Pacey, and Joe Reinhardt, did not debate the pros and cons of urban chickens, instead choosing to limit their focus to their review of the draft ordinance. Geigen said the initial draft reviewed at the meeting was written up when this issue first came up, and it's kind of a conglomeration of ordinance language from other municipalities. While the initial draft was not shared with the public at the meeting, a few tentative details were revealed through discussion, including an annual permitting process, a limit of 4 hens per property, minimum setbacks for coops, and runs of 25 feet from neighboring residents and 10 feet from neighboring property lines, size, cleanliness, and containment standards for chicken coops and runs, a requirement that coops and runs be located in rear yards only, and a schedule of escalating penalties for non-compliance. Permits for urban chickens would be issued only for properties with one-family dwellings, with multi-family housing like apartment buildings ineligible. The city would be able to deny a permit requested by anyone with outstanding debt to the city, a criminal conviction for animal cruelty, or a history of property maintenance neglect or any other city ordinance violations. Schering noted that the proposed regulations would require modifying the city's zoning code to define coops and runs as accessory structures requiring a building permit issued to the property owner. Schering also noted that a plan for enforcement would need to be contemplated considering the demands already placed on city staff. Mayor Bill Engel said he does not feel police officers who have enough to do already should be responsible. I don't think it's a police issue, Engel said. I believe it's either the animal control officer, June Bain, or our code enforcement officer. Turning to page three, we have on the Sprouting Skies Wind Farm, gigantic wind farm eyed for Ford and Iroquois counties. 200 megawatt project would span 200,000 acres in two counties, according to firm. Bloomington, Minnesota. A Minnesota-based company plans to build a 500 megawatt wind farm spanning about 200,000 acres in Ford and Iroquois counties. As Ford County Board Chairman Chase McCall of Gibson City put it, the Sprouting Skies Wind Farm is going to be gigantic. Construction of the wind farm is expected to occur from 2029 to 2031, with commercial operations targeted to begin in 2031. The developer, Geronimo Power, is in the early stages of the application process. It's a wait-and-see period, said McCall, who last spoke with a company representative in February. I think they're doing an exploratory effort. In Iroquois County, Deputy Zoning Clerk Matty Ousery said the company submitted an application in February to build a meteorological tower of fewer than 200 feet in height in Douglas Township near Gilman, and a permit for the MET tower was subsequently issued. The tower would be used to evaluate and collect wind data. Neither Ford County nor Iroquois County has received an application yet for special use permits. I've been in communication with them, Ford County Zoning Administrator Brandon Mager said last week, but haven't received the application yet. McCall said he believes future projects in Illinois will span more than one county, like in this situation, because of the state standard. Translated, it's more difficult for counties to turn thumbs down to such project. When I first started on the county board, zoning of wind farms was decided county by county. And now that the state has taken over the zoning authority for such projects, you're seeing multi-county projects, McCall said. It seems like local control is disappearing. Illinois legislation, signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker in January 2023, stripped local governments of their zoning authority for commercial wind and solar projects and required that counties establish new zoning rules. Counties were prohibited from outright banning renewable energy projects. Geronimo Power has established an office in the Marshall Building in the 100 block of West State Street in downtown Paxton. An informational poster inside the office's front window touts the benefits of that the Mammoth Wind Farm would provide the local economy, including by producing significant tax revenue, project construction and operational jobs, and annual contributions through a charitable fund. The project is expected to generate $136 million in payments to participating landowners over 20 years, or $6,800,000 annually, plus new property tax revenue over that same time frame of $88,300,000 for local school districts, or $4 million per year, $138 million for the local county, or $691,000 per year, $4,800,000 for fire districts, or $214,200 per year, $3,300,000 for township roads and bridges, or $168,500 per year, and $1,800,000 for the townships, or $90,700 per year. The project would also create some 500 construction and related service jobs and 20 to 21 full-time jobs, according to the company's poster. The project would also kick in $2.5 million over 20 years, $125,000 annually, to the charitable fund. The goal of the charitable fund will be to provide direct benefit and value to local communities within the Sprouting Skies project footprint, the poster reads. Also, the wind farm would avoid approximately 1,300,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions annually during its operation, which, the poster noted, is the equivalent of taking an estimated 315,700 cars off the road for a year, or providing the equivalent electrical usage of an estimated 282,000 homes each year. According to the poster, Geronimo Power is farmer-founded and community-focused, and was formerly called National Grid Renewables. The company develops, owns, and operates large-scale power assets throughout America's heartland, including solar, wind, and energy storage, the poster said. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, June 10th. Mary Ellen Allen, Paxton. Mary Ellen Allen, 77, of Paxton, died Wednesday, June 3rd, surrounded by her family. A memorial service was held Wednesday, June 10th, at Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Pat Allen officiating. The scholarship has been established in her honor for those pursuing a nursing career. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the scholarship fund online at app.giveeffect.com/campaigns45746-Mary Ellen Allen Scholarship. Alfred L. Goodman. That is spelled G-U-D-E-M-A-N. Sisna Park. Alfred Leonard, Al Goodman, 80, of Sisna Park, died Wednesday, June 30th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana after having renal failure and a stroke. Funeral services were held Monday, June 8th at the Christian Bible Church in Sisna Park, officiated by the Reverend Steve Hall. Military rites were accorded after the service. Memorials may be made to the Christian Bible Church in Sisna Park. Patricia L. Haskins, Keosauqua, Iowa. Patricia Lorraine Watson Haskins, 86, of Keosauqua, Iowa, formerly of Piper City and Sibley, died Wednesday, December 10th, 2025, at her home. A celebration of her life, followed by internment, will be on Saturday, June 20th, at St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Chatsworth, starting at 11 a.m. Memorials may be made in her honor to St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Chatsworth. Frederick Strebeck, Gibson City. Frederick Eugene Strebeck, 81. Died Saturday, May 30th, with his wife at his side. A celebration of life service was held Friday, June 5th, at the Gibson City Bible Church, followed by a family graveside service with military honors at the Drummer Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Gibson City Bible Church, Faith Baptist Church, or the Drummer Township Cemetery Tree Fund to plant a tree in his honor. Shally Ann Stickles, Paxton. Shally Ann Stickles, 64, a native of Paxton, died Friday, June 5th at Barnes Jewish Hospital with her children by her side. A memorial visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 16th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to a cancer research organization of the donor's choice in honor of her battles with cancer. Arcelia R. Watson, Rankin. Arcelia R. Watson, 97, of Rankin, died Friday, June 5th at Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care in Hoopston. A funeral service will be held at 2:30 p.m. Saturday, June 13th at the Knox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Visitation will be from noon to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, June 13th at the funeral home. Burial will follow at the Rankin Union Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice or Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care in Hoopston. We turn back to the news on page 2. We have from Paxton. Paxton-based garbage hauler under new ownership, which will be GFL. Central Illinois disposal and recycling customers now told to call GFL Environmental. Paxton. A Paxton-based residential garbage hauler and commercial waste collection company has been sold to a Florida-based company. GFL Environmental, based in Miami Beach, has purchased Central Illinois Disposal and Recycling. Established in 1979, CIDR operated in Paxton and surrounding communities for 39-plus years and was a family-owned business, according to its website. The sale was effective June 1st. GFL Environmental provides solid waste management and environmental services to 4 million households in Canada and in 18 states in the United States. All calls to CIDR were referred or transferred to GFL Environmental's corporate offices, but were not returned. A message left with CIDR owner Gene May of Paxton was not immediately returned. Paxton Mayor Bill Ingold said no one from CIDR had contacted him or anyone from the city of Paxton regarding the sale. People posting on Facebook were not afraid to weigh in. One CIDR customer felt customers should have been notified earlier about the sale, with Ashley Grace commenting, "I think it's crazy. All the customers were blindsided by this with no notice." Using a handle of Efficient Reindeer 4006, another Facebook user chided those denigrating CIDR, said the company has provided great support to the communities for a lot of years. "Everyone deserves to be able to retire," the post said. "I am glad he found someone to take over his business. Happy retirement, CIDR. You worked hard for it." Dennis Fairchild agreed, writing that he would miss CIDR, as they had great service to us as well for the last 15 years. The Paxton area will continue to be served by locally based Elson's Paxton Sanitary System. Other area garbage service providers include CR Disposal LLC and Sisda Park-based Kaufman Disposal Services LLC. And we have some 4th of July news. Old-fashioned 4th of July set at Pell's Park, Paxton. The annual old-fashioned 4th of July celebration at Pell's Park in Paxton, sponsored this year by the Paxton Area Chamber of Commerce and Paxton Main Street, is scheduled for Saturday, July 4th. The celebration begins at 7 a.m. with registration for a 5K race, sponsored by Paxton Masonic Lodge No. 416. The 5K race begins at 8 a.m. At 9 a.m., vendors open, running through 3 p.m. At 9:45 a.m., the presentation of the colors will take place by American Legion Prairie Post No. 150 of Paxton in the park's main pavilion, followed by a community worship service led by the Reverend Tim Delaney of the First United Methodist Church of Paxton. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., a car show will be held with registration of entries done on-site. Also during that same time will be face painting. Also, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., food vendors will be open. The antique tractor show opens at 11 a.m. The Chamber of Commerce food tent also opens at 11 a.m. with pork burgers grilled by the Ford Iroquois pork producers being served. From 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., bingo will be played in the park's pavilions, sponsored by the Bank of Pontiac. From 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., Bubble Lady Bubbles will be on hand. At noon, a Betsy Ross impersonator will be at the park handing out small American flags. Also at noon, the Declaration of Independence will be read by Dean Gykin, commemorating 250 years since its signing. Later, there will be food vendors open from 6 to 9 p.m. at Bixby Park at Paxton's southeast end, Edge, a lighted golf cart parade arriving at 8:30 p.m. at Bixby Park and starting at 8:15 at Pell's Park, and a fireworks show at 9 p.m., sponsored by the Paxton, by the City of Paxton. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.